True Crime Brewery contains disturbing content related to real-life crimes. Medical information is opinion based on facts of a crime and should not be interpreted as medical advice or treatment. Listener discretion is advised.
She was the strongest witness for herself to her own murder.
911,
Bay Greeny
Police Fire.
Oh, I was literally
about to be shot.
8 months pregnant. Okay, ma'am, you're 8 months pregnant. You've been shot. You're at Wessex Square.
That was probably the largest piece of evidence in the entire trial. And they pulled it out on day one, minute one.
It just showed the courage and the strength of this young woman and her character that she was fighting to hold on to life long enough to tell somebody what had happened and who had done it and to try to save her baby.
Ma'am, can you give me any information about what kind of car it was?
No.
Where's your husband at?
I don't have one.
Or your boyfriend, the one you said that was with you. Where's he at?
He's in the car in front of me and he slowed down and somebody pulled up beside me and did this.
And then where'd he go?
He just left.
Okay. All right, what's his name?
Ray Caruso, Ray Panthers.
Okay, what's his name?
Ray Caruso.
Ray Caruso.
89.
The part that she said, I think she said number 89 or number 88 or whatever number he was, I'm having his baby. He stopped in front of me and they started shooting. I don't remember all the exact words, but something to that effect. And I was kind of thinking to myself, would I have the wherewithal to come up with that stuff if I'd been just been shot? As we got more into the trial and as we got into deliberations, we kept going back to that 911 call. And we just, you know, couldn't wrap our hands around why would she say some of the things she said at this moment if they weren't true. That was probably 90% of why I voted the way I voted.
Welcome to True Crime Brewery, Ty Grabbers. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick.
Sharika Adams was joyful and magnetic. She was a beautiful 24-year-old who'd worked as an exotic dancer and was establishing a career in real estate. She'd done some acting, too, and she appeared briefly in the movie House Party 3. Sharika became pregnant and appeared to have accepted that she would be a single mother. Her boyfriend, professional football player Ray Caruth, was not happy about the baby-to-be, and he wanted her to get an abortion. With Sharika, as with his first child's mother, Caruth did not embrace his role as a parent. Caruth's aversion to having children was really no secret. In fact, he was very vocal about it. He reportedly joked about killing his children so he wouldn't have to pay the mothers any money. The moments following the shooting that took Sharika's life are immortalized in her 911 call. She'd been shot 4 times. She was crying, struggling to speak with the 911 operator, with her life leaving her body as she bled from her wounds. The facts are shocking. This was a murder for hire, a plan by a cold-blooded man to kill his girlfriend and his unborn son. Sharika would speak for herself in court through the 911 call recording and some notes that she wrote in the hospital. So this is a fascinating and very heartbreaking case today.
That it is. So I have a beer called Red Angel from Wicked Weed Brewing Company, and they're in Asheville, North Carolina. And Wicked Weed's one of those up-and-coming breweries. They produce a bunch of good beer. This particular one is a wild ale for you, Jill. So a little bit of a tart sour beer.
Thank you.
It's a deep purple color.
Really?
Yes. Pretty pink head. Quickly disappears. Like most of these wild ales, they are pretty bubbly, and they make good heads, but they disappear fast. And the aroma I can only describe as raspberry jam.
That sounds nice. Yummy. So it would be something to drink with a nice piece of toast in the morning, I guess.
Sure. It has a tart raspberry taste, and it's a little bit oaky that you get from the barrels that it's aged in. And it's a dry, pretty crisp beer. Nice one.
I appreciate it. It sounds delicious.
It's all for you.
Thank you.
And me.
Of course. I'll always share. Well, let's open it up then.
Okay.
Okay, saunter down to the quiet end.
You know what I was thinking? At this bar that we frequent, they, during the wintertime, I guess it's to just draw some customers in or something, but they have $5 flights.
Ooh.
Pretty good deal. Now, for those of you who might not know, a flight is a way to sample different beers at that particular establishment. So you get a number of pours, various sizes. So you can have the number of beers that you sample and the amount that you can have varies from establishment to establishment.
But it's usually 4 to 6, right?
Well, this particular one, it's 4 4-ounce glasses. So
okay.
It's 16 ounces of beer. And it's $5. Not that I'm that frugal. But
you're really not. But
I know.
But that's a good deal.
Well, yeah, you can have a single 8-ounce serving of a particularly great beer that's going to cost you $10.
Well, I like this just tasting small amounts because those beer dinners where you get a beer with all these different courses and they bring you a full beer each time, that's deadly.
It can take a toll on you, that's for sure.
It sure can. We had that one in Maine where they were making us a special vegan course dinner because you took care of their kids. And with every course, there were like 5 courses. We got 16 ounces of beer. And this was heavy-duty food, too, like a stew and some kind of lentil loaf.
Yeah, I remember we ended up taking a bunch of food home.
And a wonderful dessert and a dessert beer.
And not drinking that much of the beer.
Couldn't move.
Couldn't do it.
No. But it was great. It was a lovely thing for them to do. But anyway, that's why a flight is nice, because you just get a little bit of each one to taste.
Yeah, and it's a good way to introduce yourself to the different beers that the bar might have, or if you're in a brewery, get to sample a few of them. I think it's a pretty good way to do it.
Yeah, now is there a certain order? Because they seem to go from light to dark.
Well, you can order any variety you want. Typically, you go from the lightest first to the darkest, but that's not necessarily the case all the time. And I just always figure out for people that you drink it whatever order you want to drink it.
But you have told me that some IPAs are palate wreckers and you can't drink anything afterwards and really say that you've tasted it.
Well, that would be one bit of advice would be that if you're dealing with a really very, very hoppy beer, you save that one.
Save it for last.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you don't have to. I mean, drink some water in between, eat some crackers or have some food.
Well, yeah, there's no beer police.
It's not going to make a big difference.
Right. Okay. All right.
All right, on with the story. So Ray Theotis Carruth was born January 20th, 1974 in Sacramento, California. His mother's name was Theodry, and his father's name has never been revealed. Carruth was initially named Ray Lamar Wiggins, but this was changed when his mother married Samuel Carruth, and Ray was given his stepfather's surname.
Can I chime in here and say, if they changed his middle name from Lamar to Theotis, maybe his biological dad's name was Lamar, and that's why they got rid of it?
That's possible, because I'm figuring that his mother's name was Wiggins.
Yes.
But anyway, he became Ray Theotis Carruth.
At a pretty young age.
Very young age.
Okay.
I couldn't find anything that said that he was actually adopted by Mr. Carruth, but he did take his name, or he was given his name.
Sure.
So he grew up in Sacramento and attended Valley High School. And this is where things started happening for him because he was quite an athlete. Now, his best sport by far was football. And he developed into an outstanding receiver. There was an interview with one of his high school coaches that they were looking at kids trying out for the football team. And they saw Ray, who was a sophomore in high school then, and he was head and shoulders above everyone else. He starred. He was great.
So a receiver, just for those who are football challenged like me, that's the guy that runs and catches the ball.
He catches the ball. The quarterback throws him the ball.
So the receiver's the one that makes a lot of touchdowns.
He can.
Okay.
And he can also rush the ball sometimes. You know.
Don't know what that means either.
Well, he can, instead of being a running back, the receiver can act as a running back. So Carruth was recruited by several colleges, and he eventually decided to attend Colorado University. These times, the 90s, were heady times for Colorado University football. They had won the national championship in 1990, and they were consistent favorites for the conference title, and they almost always appeared in a major bowl game. So his last year at Colorado, the team played in the Holiday Bowl, and this was the 9th straight year that Colorado had been invited to appear in a bowl game. This is back in kind of the heyday of Colorado football. They had Heisman Trophy winners, that's supposedly the best college football in the country. They had All-America players.
Any other famous ones that went there that you could mention?
Quarterback Coy Detmer, and I know you're not going to recognize any of these.
Oh.
Cordell Stewart, these are quarterbacks that went on to play professional football.
Okay.
So I'm figuring that's famous enough.
I can respect that, sure.
Running backs, there's all sorts of people.
That were coming out of that
school. Out of Colorado. Carruth starred at Colorado. He didn't play that much in his first year, but averaged 11.5 yards per catch, and that's a pretty good amount, okay? Second year, he averaged 18.2 yards per catch, and he also ran back some kickoffs. You know what those are.
Yes, okay. I do.
And he averaged almost 21 yards per return. Now, junior and senior years were the years when Carruth really became a star. Junior year, he led the conference in receiving yards, averaging 19 yards per catch. And Colorado played in the Cotton Bowl, where they easily beat Oregon. Then his senior year is even better. He again led the conference in receiving yards, and he averaged over 20 yards per catch. They played in the Holiday Bowl and beat Washington. And to top it all off, Carruth was named to the first team All-America team. So these are pretty good honors.
So All-America, is that like an all-star team?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, they have first team, second team.
Sure.
Blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Carruth was fortunate to play for two excellent coaches. One was Bill McCartney, the other was Rick Neuheisel. These are pretty well-known college football coaches, pretty famous.
Okay.
And then he also played, as I mentioned, under two quarterbacks, Coy Detmer and Cordell Stewart. These guys became NFL quarterbacks. Make no mistake, he had a stellar college career, and he was going to be a high draft pick in the National Football League draft.
So he was doing well in his classes? Do we know what his major was?
No.
So his classes were secondary? It was that kind of situation?
I don't know. I believe he got a degree.
Okay.
So he was going to go high in the NFL draft. Okay. Going to be one of the high picks. Good receiver, excellent deep threat. He had good speed, so he could go run deep and catch a long pass for a touchdown. The future is looking pretty bright.
At least professionally.
Professionally. That's the key word.
Yeah, because his personal life was kind of a mess. During his second year at Colorado, Carruth's girlfriend at the time, Michelle Wright, gave birth to his son.
Yeah, this is the girlfriend in California, in Sacramento.
And she named the baby Raylando. Ray would have nothing to do with his son, never even sending him a birthday present.
Yeah, he pretty much never even acknowledged him as being his son.
But finally, when Raylando was 4 years old, Michelle took Carruth to court. And at this time, he had signed his first contract with the Carolina Panthers. That was his NFL team. The judge issued a temporary order requiring him to pay $5,500 a month in child support. So he was angry about this. He was not happy. He met with Michelle, and he did get her to agree to a reduction in child support. She told him she would agree to take $2,700 per month if he would make an effort to be a better father and spend some time with his son. But then, when he didn't pay any child support or spend any time with his son, Michelle called him up to complain. So, as you can imagine, they had quite the discussion, and according to Michelle, Carruth told her not to be surprised if she were to have a fatal automobile accident. Then he followed that up by saying he was kidding, but once you say something like that, you know it's not a joke.
Yeah.
It's not funny.
No, you definitely don't. And this is kind of a mess for him.
But it's a mess that he's creating.
He's created.
Yes.
But here he is. He's just signed his contract with the Carolina Panthers. He's making bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And he's issued an order to pay $5,500 for child support.
Which is a lot of money, but he could afford it.
He could afford it, but he just felt like he didn't have to do that. You know?
But then she even compromised, and he still didn't pay. So while all this was going on with Michelle, of course, he moved on to another girl. And there was always another one, Of course, now that he's a big football player, there's no shortage of women. He was a big football star, even though he hadn't even played for the pro team yet. So he was almost 23, and this girl was a 17-year-old high school student in Colorado. Caruth started out being very generous with her, giving her money, clothes, and even a Lexus. Now she became pregnant, and when she told Caruth, he told her she shouldn't have the baby. She testified at a later time that he said, "Don't make me send somebody out there to kill you." So this girl did have an abortion?
She underwent the abortion because she was frightened.
Yeah, I could see. I mean, looking back, of course.
So here he's kind of, maybe more than kind of, he's threatened two women that have been carrying his child.
Which is awful.
Right.
He has no right to do that.
He doesn't. But to me, they're serious threats.
Absolutely they are. Mm. He's not kidding.
Yeah. Even though he says, "I'm only kidding."
Mm.
Right. So Caruth was chosen in the first round of the NFL draft by the Carolina Panthers. He was the 27th pick overall. So basically the way this works, the higher you are picked, the more money you can command. So the first pick of the draft is basically going to be the highest paid one. I mean, there are exceptions, but whoever goes first is going to get the biggest contract to begin with.
Because they're one of the most desired people.
Yeah. But this is the first round. First round picks are going to make more than second round picks, who make more than third round picks, and so on. So the whole thing is to get picked as high up as you can.
This is like the grown-up version of being on the playground and getting picked for the team.
Right.
Yeah.
You got it. So he signed a 4-year contract where he would get $3.7 million.
Wow.
Okay, for 4 years. Now this is in the mid-90s. Late 90s, 20-some years ago.
So it's even more of a fortune than we're thinking.
Yeah. So he's going to get paid $3.7 million. This included a $1.3 million signing bonus.
So maybe he could afford a little child support.
Duh. he signed his contract. He's going to get paid, but he already got $1.3 million as a signing bonus. So he's got to pay his agent the 10% or whatever.
Sure.
But he's still sitting on a good chunk of change.
Absolutely.
Like a million.
Yeah.
So at this point, it certainly looked like he'd hit the jackpot. He grew up poor in Sacramento. He stood out in college, and now he's in the NFL. Now, he did have an excellent rookie season. He played in 15 games. He caught 44 passes for 545 yards, and he scored 4 touchdowns. And this tied him for first in terms of touchdowns among rookie receivers. And for these efforts, he was named to the all-rookie team in the NFL. So it looks like he's heading towards real stardom. He's begun playing in high school. He starred in high school. He excelled in Colorado. And now his first year in the pros, boom, he's on his way. And this is always a good thing. You want to play really well. And you can command a better contract, obviously, when it's time to re-sign. Or you can start requesting or demanding that you get paid more because you're so valuable. But he's definitely heading in the right direction for a good career in the NFL.
So he should have been happy and generous, but he wasn't.
No.
Well, to say that his second professional season did not go well, that's kind of an understatement, huh?
Oh, yes. This is, if you're into hubris, this is where things start going downhill for our boy Ray. So he broke his foot in the opening game of 1998, and he didn't catch another pass that season. So he ended his year with 4 catches for 59 yards and no touchdowns. And this was all in the one game he played.
So that's not good. But if you have an injury, they make allowances for that, right?
They do. So the expectation is that he's going to come back strong the next year.
Well, because you really have to get into your rehab.
Yeah. But he mostly rehabbed on his own. He apparently was having a tough time. He felt that his teammates had abandoned him. So he stayed home most of the time and he played football on his PlayStation. So that's a good way to rehab.
Well, I would think that the coaches and whoever would have some kind of plan for him of rehab that he needed to follow as part of his job, right? No?
They did.
But he didn't do it?
Well, he did it, but he did the minimum. But he was ready to come back strong in 1999. He was going to be back to his rookie year.
Okay, so he felt that he had improved and gotten better.
He did.
I mean, the injury healed okay.
Injury healed fine. He was ready to go. But the next season didn't go very well either. He was benched in September for some of a game because he dropped a pass at a crucial time in the game. Coach got pissed off because apparently the coach felt he should have had it. So he sat him down. Then in October, he sprained his left ankle and is out for a month.
So that's the other ankle from the one he broke.
Right. So he ended up the year only playing in 6 games and catching 14 passes for 200 yards. So here's another season that's a waste.
So his career is pretty much in the crapper, huh?
Well, it's heading that way for sure.
Yeah.
Brilliant rookie season, basically a non-existent second season, and a crappy third season.
So while all this is happening, he gets someone else pregnant. So that would be Sharika Adams.
Yeah, now he's got another woman who's going to be demanding child support.
Sure, which is her absolute right to do. He got her pregnant. So Ray had begun dating Sharika Adams, who was a real estate agent and a part-time model. Sharika was the daughter of Sandra Adams, a single mom who worked in personnel at IBM. Sandra had been born and raised in the Piedmont region of North Carolina, and she was only 17 years old when Sharika was born. In 1975, in rural North Carolina, a girl in Sandra's situation was, of course, expected to move away or get married and quit school. But her parents were different. They were very hard-working, proud people, and they expected Sandra to go ahead and graduate high school regardless of this. They told Sandra that they would help her take care of Sharika while she finished her schooling. And then after she graduated from high school, they also encouraged Sandra to go to college. These are excellent parents. They told her they would keep Sharika while she was in college. And Sandra had graduated from UNC Charlotte with a degree in psychology, and she got her job with IBM. And then she brought Sharika to Charlotte with her. So she brought the baby after she graduated.
Yeah, the baby stayed in whatever smaller town that Sandra's parents lived in.
Well, they were basically raising Sharika until
they took care of Sharika until Sandra finished school and got a job.
Well, I kind of feel like that's the way it should be, a family helping each other out.
Sure.
I mean, how it should be is the father of the baby should be helping out. But in lieu of that, I think they did a really good job.
Yeah, I think the father of Sharika rabbited pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And never had any contact.
Right.
But the work ethic of Sandra's parents, I mean, they recognized that she had a good mind, that she shouldn't waste it doing menial jobs with a high school education. She went to college, gets hired by IBM personnel department, and worked there.
But still, as the child of a single mom, Sharika did grow up fairly quickly. She had some responsibilities. But as a young adult, she was really living a good life. She was beautiful, very beautiful. And men always noticed her. She earned enough money in her job as a real estate agent and a model that she bought herself a black BMW and a red Mitsubishi coupe. She mingled with newly rich people and she danced at the Diamond Club. That was one of Charlotte's more exclusive places. Her beauty gained her access to functions that were attended by professional athletes in Charlotte. And one day at a barbecue, and this was in the summer of 1998, she met a young football player. That was Ray Carruth. He had recovered from his broken foot, and he was really excited to be returning to football. She didn't know a lot about him, though. She knew that he was handsome and charming, that he had survived a rough childhood in Sacramento, and that he was quite a star at Colorado University. She also knew he had a great first year as a professional. He told her he had the talent of a superstar, and if he could just keep from getting injured, he would just take off. He saw himself as an intellectual, too, and if football didn't work out, he believed he could write novels and screenplays and direct films. She wasn't aware that he had a son from an earlier relationship and didn't know about the high school girl that he had impregnated and coerced into an abortion.
Right. He's kind of feeding her the line, a would-be star. Which I would do too, right? You want to put yourself in the best light.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the beginning of the relationship. You don't really need to tell someone all your bad history right away. Nobody does that. But there are some things that she would find out about him that weren't great.
Oh, no question. And from his standpoint, he's always tried to distance himself from Sharika. He said, well, we weren't really dating. We weren't really that serious. We just hooked up from time to time. He did everything he could to downplay the relationship with her.
Yeah, so if this had been 50 years ago and there was no DNA, he would have totally denied that the child was even his.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. So even though it appeared that Sharika was living kind of a flashy lifestyle, she was in many ways an old-fashioned woman. She wanted to have a big wedding, a husband, and a family. When Mother's Day 1999 arrived, Sharika told her mother that maybe she wasn't married with a husband, but she was pregnant. She was pregnant with Ray Carruth's child. So Sandra tried to be happy for her daughter, but she knew that things were going to be complicated and not that easy for her. Sharika wanted to give the baby the Carruth name, but Sandra told her, if you're not married when the baby comes into this world, he needs to be an Adams. For his part, Ray Carruth didn't want the baby to be anything. He didn't want the baby to exist. He told Sharika to get an abortion. But that was not something that she would do. That wasn't something she believed in doing, and she was happy about having a baby. So she refused.
Yeah, which set things in motion.
So this became a big contention, point of contention.
It certainly
did. To put it mildly.
Whether because of his lengthy absence from football or maybe he had a predisposition, Carruth knew some shady characters. There was a guy called New York that he hung out with and another guy called Little Man. New York was this big, huge guy, about 300 pounds, and he would do anything for money. Little Man was physically less intimidating, but he knew how to shoot and he knew how to deal crack. So New York and Little Man to Ray seemed to be ideal for a person who wanted to solve a problem outside of the law.
Well, yeah, that guy New York is terrifying. Not just his physical presence, but the way he speaks. Just super cold-hearted person. Terrifying.
Yeah. You remember the scenes we saw of the trial?
Yes.
With him going after Carruth's lawyer?
Yeah, he was threatening everybody.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. He probably wasn't that afraid to go to prison, right? He would be in charge of most things.
No question.
There were several false starts to this whole plot. Sharika went to a childbirth class with Ray, and he attended with her. And New York later testified that Carruth told him to meet them after class and beat up Sharika to the point where she would have a miscarriage. She would lose the baby. New York didn't show up, although he really would say he had no problem. He would have done that. It wasn't an ethical dilemma for him at all.
No. Not to him. He's a con man, so he's trying to leverage Carruth for as much money as he can.
Right, yes.
So we might have some false starts, but that means more money come into him.
Right, he's milking it.
Yep. And I'm not sure simply saying, okay, beat her up and she'll have a miscarriage. That's not a guarantee.
Oh, well, I was picturing a really bad beating that would guarantee that. I didn't think he was just going to punch her a couple times. I thought he was going to do some serious damage until she was bleeding out.
But it would have to be a fairly significant amount of beating.
Well, the whole thing's heinous to even consider.
Well, we're not even discussing that part of it.
Well, it's just a horrible thought. I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Another time, he agreed to go to Sharika's apartment and just kill the baby there. Another time, he was going to ambush her outside of a restaurant. So he was receiving some payments.
Yeah, he'd get 500 here, a couple thousand there to set things up. But he kept delaying. But eventually, they came up with a plan. When we talk about what actually happens, this doesn't seem like a real thought-out plan, does it?
No, a lot of it doesn't make sense.
Nope. Well, murder doesn't make sense anyway.
That's true.
But
this
this plan, I don't know which genius thought this up.
They were pretty much doomed to be caught.
I think so. I mean, there was some luck involved in terms of them being caught, but still, it wasn't a great plan.
No. So it was the evening of November 15th, 1999. Sharika was already 8 months pregnant. So that's a baby that would definitely survive at that point.
Right.
Quite well. Could probably be fine. And she got a call from Carruth, and he said he wanted to take her to the movies. So I think she was hesitant about doing this, but finally agreed. He was talking nice to her and finally coaxed her into it.
Yeah, and she drove over to his house and then was worried when she got there it looked like some illegal shit was going on.
Like what? Like drugs? Or we don't know.
No, there was something about bootlegging movies.
Oh, okay.
And it was just, there wasn't a mention of drugs, but it looked like illegal activity.
Okay.
So she called her mother and said, I'm worried about this. I think I don't want to go to the movies with him. And mom said, cancel the date and go home. But apparently, Sandra could hear Carruth in the background talking to Sharika, and he convinced her to go to the movie with him. So they went to see The Bone Collector. Pretty good movie.
So that's Denzel and Angelina Jolie.
Yes.
That was a good movie.
It was. Better book, of course.
But it's kind of a creepy title when you're talking about a murder.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
They went to the movie, and then they made plans to spend the night together in Sharika's apartment. So after the movie, they go back to Carruth's place to pick up Sharika's car. So they left. Carruth was in the front with his Ford Expedition, and Sharika was behind him in her Beamer. Then behind Sharika, unbeknownst to her, was a gold Nissan Maxima with Little Man in New York inside. They're driving from Ray's place to Sharika's place and come to a fairly secluded spot, and Carruth breaks to a stop. So Sharika stops behind him, of course, and then the gold Maxima pulled around and stopped to her left. So she's kind of trapped.
She's very trapped, and it was set up to trap her.
Right. So New York had a Charter Arms 5-shot 38 special revolver, and he shot all five rounds into the BMW. And after he'd done that, Carruth pulled away in his Ford Expedition. He was on his way to a friend's house to play video games. Shows how distraught he was about what he had just orchestrated.
Exactly. So his story is going to be that they went to the movies and then she was going home?
Yep.
And he doesn't know what happened. He was at home playing video games the whole time.
He was playing video games.
So possibly he might have gotten away with it if she hadn't been able to get a call to 911.
I guess he could have, although they still would have figured that out pretty easily, I think.
Well, they'd have phone records between Carruth and the murderers.
Yep.
The gun, of course.
So after they've done the shooting, Little Man turned the Maxima around and headed back the way he'd come.
Now, was there another guy in the car, too?
Two other guys.
How many guys are in the Maxima?
There's three guys.
The driver, the shooter.
There's New York and Little Man and a friend of theirs who was basically along for the ride, had the misfortune to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right, okay. So we don't think he really had anything to do with it.
He was sentenced, as we'll talk about, but received a pretty benign prison term. So the problem, though, as they turn around and head back the way they come, Little Man could look in his rearview mirror and he saw the brake lights of the BMW come on. So he knew that she was still alive.
But they didn't go back after her.
No. That's a good point, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't.
Did he not have any more bullets?
That's possible. He'd emptied the gun.
Yeah, but she was still alive.
Yeah, she actually called 911. And you've heard a portion of that call in the prologue to this episode. She told the operator that she'd been shot. She also told the operator that the baby's father, Ray Carruth, had been in the car in front of her. She also said that after the shooting, Carruth had just driven off. That would be very suspicious in
yes,
and of
it
itself.
Would. Yep. This is damning evidence.
But she was seriously injured.
She certainly was.
The ambulance arrived and Sharika was transported to the medical center. Evaluation there showed that four of the five bullets had hit her. Three lodged in her flesh and didn't do serious harm, but the other one had been devastating. It went through her left side, passed through her abdomen, crossed her right chest, and came to rest near her right armpit. And it tore holes in her stomach, her small intestine, and her large intestine. It penetrated her liver, her diaphragm, and a lung. It severed her pancreas. The worst result of that bullet was that it destroyed her splenic artery and vein, and that's what was causing the serious bleeding.
Yes, spleen injuries, you'll bleed like crazy internally. This is what caused the problems. The bullet didn't hit her uterus or her fetus, but the blood supply to the baby had been cut off because of this bullet wound. So there's no blood flow from the placenta to the infant.
None at
which
all.
Which obviously is not good. Minimal. So it took about 70 minutes before the baby was delivered by emergency C-section.
Why did it take so long?
Well, they had to get her to the hospital and get her stabilized because they couldn't just whip her into surgery. She'd die. So they'd have to push some fluids, push some blood into her, and then try to save the baby. We know that this is a long time without oxygen to the baby.
So too long, really.
Too long. So the infant did need a lengthy resuscitation. And they eventually were able to get the baby resuscitated. But certainly, this is going to be a guarded prognosis. I mean, over an hour with virtually no blood flow, no oxygen, this isn't good for a fetus.
Well, yeah, it's almost a given that he would have some deficits if he did survive.
Yeah, he would have some form of cerebral palsy.
Do you want to just explain briefly what cerebral palsy is?
Sure. We're just talking, it's a kind of a general term for injury to specific parts of the brain. And the injury is caused by lack of oxygen. So depending on where these areas are, you can have just some minor defects in motor function. Maybe not much of anything. You can have more major things where speech is impacted. If there's enough brain cell death because of lack of oxygen, you can have pretty general delayed development. No language, no speech, not real ambulatory.
So there's a wide range.
There's a very wide range.
Anything from almost completely normal
to a devastating condition.
But Sharika did survive the surgery. When her mom, Sandra, saw her afterwards, she asked Sharika whose surname should be given to the baby, and Sharika said Adams. So the baby boy was named Chancellor Lee Adams. Ray Carruth did visit the hospital, bringing his new girlfriend along with him and never asking how Sharika was doing. He did ask repeatedly about the baby. When the baby's condition improved enough so that doctors could predict that he would survive, Carruth showed his picture to some friends. And he told them, "He's long like me, like I was when I was a child." Okay.
Yeah, that's right. So 10 days after the shooting occurred, police arrested Carruth and three other suspects. Van Brett Watkins, that's New York, Michael Kennedy, he's Little Man, and Stanley Abraham. And this was a friend of Little Man's who just, like I said, had the misfortune to be in the car that night. So they were all charged with multiple felonies, including attempted murder and intent to kill an unborn child. Carruth was released on $3 million bond with the provision that he would turn himself in if either Sharika or Chancellor died.
Now we know how they got him, because she'd said that he was in front of her in the car, so of course they went to talk to him right away. But how did they find out about the other guys?
Like you said, phone records. And they knew he was acquainted with these people.
And they talked to the police. They didn't lawyer up.
Nope.
So early on, Carruth's team, the Carolina Panthers, were very cautious about this whole situation. Coach George Seifert said Carruth was on paid leave, and there was no specific timetable for his return. On the 2nd of December, this was changed to a leave of absence without pay. Now, what made that change on the 2nd of December?
That's when he had been arrested.
Okay, so once he was arrested, he was on leave without pay. And then at what point does he get kicked off the team? Because it seems like, if you think of Aaron Hernandez, wasn't he kicked off the team as soon as he was arrested, or no?
Pretty quickly. But yeah. The Patriots are kind of a no-nonsense organization. You're not going to get a bunch of chances with them.
Plus, he was arrested for murder. At this point, Ray Carruth was not arrested for murder because nobody had died.
Right. So he went from leave of absence with pay to leave of absence without pay once he was rearrested or found, because we'll talk about that.
Okay.
That's when he was kicked off the team and suspended indefinitely.
But over this time, Chancellor continued to improve, but Sharika got worse. She was in a coma and her organs were failing.
Yeah, she had gotten through surgery and was fairly lucid for a short time. I don't know, a day or two, a few days, because she was answering questions. She was intubated, so she couldn't speak, and she was writing things down in response to questions that people had. She was failing. She slipped into a coma, and she had total organ failure.
So how painful for her mother, because she survived. And you would probably feel like she's going to make it if she's made it to the hospital and survived surgery. And
yeah,
especially if she can speak to you.
Wouldn't you think?
Breaks my heart for her mom.
The results have been set in motion with that gunshot wound.
There was just too much damage.
Too much damage.
So given the fact that her prognosis was so poor, the possibility was raised that baby Chancellor might be put into foster care. Sandra didn't want that to happen, of course, so she hired a lawyer right away and drew up some paperwork to adopt the child.
Well, to have custody of the child.
At least to have custody, but eventually adopt.
Yes. So on December 14th, 1999, Sharika died. Within 2 hours of her death, Sandra's lawyer, Billy Ellerby, filed a motion in Mecklenburg District Court, and a judge signed an order granting Sandra emergency custody of her grandson, Chancellor. Now, Carruth, contrary to what he had promised when he was released from jail, didn't turn himself in when Sharika died. Instead, he fled the state with a woman driving for him, but he didn't stay escaped for long. He was found actually the next day, and they captured him at a motel in West Tennessee. A little funny, they found him hiding in the trunk of a car, and in the trunk he had clothes, candy bars, a cell phone, he had bottles to collect his urine in.
Wow.
And he had $3,900 in cash.
So he was planning on being there for a while.
He was planning on heading somewhere.
So who was the woman? Do we know?
Don't know. So the very next day, his team waived him, citing a morals clause in his contract. And the day after that, he was suspended indefinitely by the NFL.
So his career was done at that point.
He's done. He's in the shitter.
And he was returned to Charlotte to face charges. He hired David Rudolph, one of the most well-respected attorneys in North Carolina, to represent him. And depending on where you fall in the Michael Peterson case, you probably like him or hate him. He was Michael Peterson's lawyer. Through every trial? It seems like at least through most of the trials.
Most of them.
Yeah. Kind of a showman, so I could see he could be disliked. Especially in this case, because I felt like he was defending kind of a scumball.
Well, you gotta defend whoever.
But one of the first things Rudolph did was that he filed a counterclaim to Sandra's claim for permanent custody of Chancellor. And I believe this was just done as a PR thing, because I don't think he really cared about having that child. He just cared about how it looked.
Absolutely.
So the filing read, "The defendant is a fit and proper person to exercise care, custody, and control of the minor child, and it is in the best interest and welfare of the minor child that his care, custody, and control be vested with the defendant at the conclusion of the defendant's legal proceedings." Kind of making an assumption that, of course, he will be acquitted.
Right, exactly.
Now, at this young age, we really wouldn't know what the child's deficits are yet. Hard to say at that young age, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to get into a few months of age to see that things aren't developing the way they should.
So he could seem like a fairly normal newborn.
So, yeah. I mean, what's a one-month-old do? He might be getting some smiles, and they might be looking at you and things like that and reacting to you. But then as they get older, say by 4 months, you can see that they don't have good muscle tone and that they're not rolling over, things like that, not holding their head up well. That's when you're starting to figure out that things aren't going as well as they ought to be.
That's got to be really hard to deal with.
No question.
That has to be awful. because you have this perfect baby. They look perfect.
Yeah, they do.
And then as they get older, they're not developing normally. How heartbreaking is that?
Right.
And this whole claim that Rudolph had filed made Sandra feel like she had been violated. I mean, here she was, her daughter's dead. Her grandson has this uncertain prognosis. There are reporters flocking around her with no thoughts for her privacy. And at this point, she owes nearly $500,000 in medical bills. And now she needs to fight to keep custody of her grandson from the man who wanted the grandson to die and killed her daughter. So that's a fine how-do-you-do.
Some situation, huh?
Yeah. While permanent custody couldn't be resolved until the trial was concluded, of course, the judge did allow for Chancellor to visit Carruth in jail. And he ordered Sandra to allow Carruth's mother, Theodry, to take Chancellor to the jail to visit his dad. And Sandra just prayed for his safety. She was a religious woman, did a lot of praying.
She had a well-worn Bible that she carried with her.
Yeah.
And she eventually found peace.
It meant a lot to her.
It did.
The trial started in November of 2000, so about a year. Rudolph claimed that after Carruth had declined to fund a drug deal, New York shot Sharika in a fit of anger after she made an obscene gesture at him. So after a two-month trial, the jurors found Carruth guilty of conspiracy to commit murder, of using an instrument to destroy an unborn child, and of shooting into an occupied vehicle. But they did not find him guilty of first-degree murder.
Yeah, interesting, huh?
So he didn't face a death sentence. The shooter, New York, was found guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced to 40 to 50 years in prison. Michael Kennedy, Little Man, pled guilty to second-degree murder and was sentenced to 11 years in prison. The guy in the back seat, Stanley Abraham, served 90 days in jail as an accessory. So he must not have done anything, been too involved, or I think he would have gotten more time than that, I would hope.
Yeah, I think they recognized that he was basically in the wrong place at the wrong time. So he got the 90 days, and then they slapped on 5 years probation.
Okay. Well, the judge had some leeway in determining Carruth's sentence. Sandra, the mother of Sharika, was called to testify. She testified that Chancellor has cerebral palsy because of this act, this heinous act, she called it. You know, we do thank God that he's still alive, she said. He is our miracle child. Because he was not supposed to be here if that plan had been implemented properly. But Chancellor is alive, and he's got such a strong will, just like his mom. He's fighting for his life every day. I see that in Chancellor every day. Chancellor, at 14 months old, is not even doing the things that some four-month-olds do. He couldn't hold onto a ball. He couldn't pick up a spoon. He had trouble holding a rattle in his hand. He didn't sit up yet. Talking about a first step was not even a point they were at yet. Doctors were telling her that he might not even take a first step until he was about 3 years old or even older. But he did have a strong will, and she said he really has a great personality. She said, that's the trait that I hope. Maybe he did get some of that from his father. Because I do believe in miracles, I know that Chancellor will get better. We're going to give him lots of love, and I know that God is working things out for him to be totally and completely well. And in my heart, even though Ray Carruth has not shown one single ounce of remorse to me or anyone in my family, she added, there's not been one, I'm sorry about what happened to your daughter. She said, but in her heart, because she's a Christian, as an act of her own will, she was forgiving him. So Carruth was sentenced to 18 to 24 years in prison.
Yeah, and Sandra soon found out that this was only the beginning of things. So even though she had been awarded permanent custody of Chancellor, Carruth's mother, Theodry, continued to challenge this, and they went round and round. Finally, in 2006, Theodry's last appeal was denied. So we got that.
But can we hold it against Theodry? I mean, she probably believed her son's story.
Oh, I'm sure she stood by her son.
Yeah. But I don't think she knew that he did it and stood by him.
Probably not. Well,
she might be a decent person.
Well, she believed that he wasn't involved.
Right. So in that case, you certainly can't blame her at all for supporting him and wanting to see her grandchild.
Right.
In 2004, Ray Carruth was found liable for the wrongful death of Sharika, and he was ordered to pay Sandra $5.8 million in damages, which, of course, he didn't have. I mean, at that point, he didn't have much.
He didn't have squat. He's not making any money. He's paid his attorneys, and he doesn't have a cent.
But he got $1 million, and he got to keep that, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think if you gave me $1 million, I'd be good for a while.
Well, a while. But she just won $5.8 million in damages.
Sure, but you're saying he didn't have anything.
Well, he didn't. What do you think his defense cost?
Well, Rudolph, probably a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, his attorneys continued to battle for him, though. They had appeals that were based on the same basic argument. The jury had been contaminated by the 911 call made by Sharika, and she couldn't be cross-examined. So as we know, when you present evidence like that, it's usually the defense's right to cross-examine the witness.
Sure. But she's dead, so they can't cross-examine her.
Right.
And the same thing with the notes that had been written while she was in the hospital before she slipped into the coma. Those shouldn't have been allowed in evidence for the same reason.
Well, but I think that it had been determined that if it's after the person had died, it can be used. We've seen that in other cases.
Well, as you'll see, yeah. So the appeals went from the North Carolina Court of Appeals to the North Carolina Supreme Court to the U.S. Supreme Court, back down to Mecklenburg Superior Court, then back up to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit. Now, by 2011, all the appeals had been exhausted. They worked hard, but didn't gain anything for their client.
Well, and despite major injuries and deficits, Chancellor has thrived as much as he can in his grandmother's care. He's actually 19 years old. He is ambulatory to some extent, and he does have some speech. So he has exceeded all expectations that were set for him.
He certainly has.
But still, he'll never be independent. He'll never be able to live by himself and work a job and get married and all that stuff.
No, he will not.
So how does Ray Carruth live with that? It's his own son.
I don't know how he could live with that. Shitty.
So he was due to be released from prison in October 2018. What do we know about that?
Well, he was, but before he was released, he did get released. But in February of 2018, Carruth wrote a letter to Sandra.
This was what, 8 to 10 pages?
15 pages.
We did read it, yeah.
Yep. So he thanked her for taking such great care of Chancellor and thanked her for the possibility of allowing him, potentially, to be a part of Chancellor's life when he was released from prison. But if you read this letter, he spends most of the time in this letter calling Sandra a liar and a publicity whore and guilty of exploiting his son. So it's, to me, kind of a half-hearted, backhanded apology.
Yeah, he's not taking responsibility at all.
No, he did not once say that he took any responsibility for it.
It starts off sweet as pie, and then it just kind of goes into a whole mess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was released in October 22nd, 2018.
Yep, he got into a car and was driven off. Some friend of his was driving. Chancellor wasn't present at his release. So he got tracked down by a reporter from the Charlotte Observer. This was a person who had been following the case throughout. And he was tracked down to his new home in Pennsylvania. This was like a month after his release, so mid to late November of 2018, which would be about a month and a half, 2 months ago. So he was tracked down, and he agreed to speak to the reporter. He refused to speak about past events, so any questions the reporter or anyone might have about what happened that night or what happened with his relationship with Sharika, off limits.
So what could they possibly have to talk about?
Not much. What they did talk about was that Carruth said, yeah, he's doing well, basically the one day at a time type of stuff. He was working for a relative and he could work from home. And he was in the process of trying to regain his driver's license because that had long ago expired when he was serving his prison term. So that's what the reporter got out of Carruth.
Wow, I really feel like he got away with it here. That's not that long in prison. 18 years for murdering someone and destroying the life of someone else.
Yep, that's what he got. He's paid his debt to society.
Technically, but I don't feel that way about it.
Well, I knew you wouldn't.
No, but I would hope he's a pariah, right? I don't think he's going to be accepted by most people.
Well, I found it interesting that he says he works at home.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. He's not going to be out in the public being accepted. He should go down to Florida and live with OJ.
Yeah, they could hang out together.
Yeah. Anything else to add?
Sad story.
Very sad.
But, and again, the Chancellor of the Sun has done way better than anyone would have expected. And I hope he continues to exceed expectations of him.
That's great, yes. But you know, he wouldn't have to go through any of this if this hadn't happened. He'd probably be a normal, healthy young man.
Probably would.
And just think about Ray Carruth when he was 19, the life he had, that he stole away from his son.
Exactly.
Maybe his son could have been a football star and had a really great life.
He might have.
I wonder where he got this idea of hating having children so much. Do you think it was just the money?
I think that was the primary reason.
Because he didn't seem to be ashamed of having a child.
No, and he really didn't take steps to not have children.
That's what I was thinking all through this. Why didn't he just get a vasectomy and save all this trouble?
Yeah, or at least some form of birth control.
Or is he the kind of asshole that would think that would take away his manhood, you know? That could be too. They do exist.
Yes. Yes, they do.
Okay. Well, it's a lot to think about. I'd just like to thank all of our listeners for your support of the podcast and let you know we appreciate it really more than you know. We'll be back in a few days here at The Quiet End with a regular episode of TCB along with your feedback. So if you have a case you'd like to recommend, if you have comments or questions on a case, call in, leave a voicemail. Or if you're shy, send an email to truecrimebrewery@tiegrabber.com.
Either way, we look forward to hearing from you.
Absolutely. We'll see you soon at The Quiet End.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.